Do you know how to do your numbers?
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
What does your dad teach you?
Mostly how to use a WeeWackle because I have my own WeeWackle.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
And so he's teaching you how to whack the weeds.
Yeah.
And what does that mean?
15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Well, I love to WeeWack and kill grass.
You kill grass.
21, 22, 23, 24.
Who else teaches you good stuff?
My great grandma.
She must be really young and pretty.
Old. 25,
26, 27.
You want to answer more questions?
I'm good.
You're good? Okay.
28, 29, 30.
Hey, give it up for the kids. Kids learn the darndest things. It's awesome. Great, 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 great. Man, how old would that be? That'd be amazing, right? We're in the series called Kids Learn the Darndest Things, and we're talking to parents and we're talking to grandparents. Truth is, if you're an aunt or an uncle, or if you're a mentor, a coach, a teacher, this is really applicable to you, although all the illustrations, for the most part, I'm using are about parenting and grandparenting. And we've been studying one verse, actually, and then from that one verse, looking at a variety of different things. And so I'm going to invite you to take your Bibles with me or your devices and turn to Proverbs chapter 22. Verse 6, and while you're turning there, I want to welcome Northmont. Great to see you, Northmont, Saturday night, and all of you that are in the room here. We've been parked in this one verse in Proverbs, and if you're looking for a place to go in your devotional life, or if you're kind of trying to find a spot where you can study, I would tell you that Proverbs is a great place. If you're on Twitter, this is like God's tweets to us every day. I mean, Proverbs. If you just read one a day, it's amazing. These short, little, very wise Proverbs that you and I can get out of this. And so you can read that every single day of the month and grab something out of it. So we've been looking at one verse, Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. As we've been in this series for the last 3 weeks, I told you the series was going to be 4 weeks long. Actually, what's going to happen is, because we've run out of time over these last couple of weeks, I have one more week that I'm going to do next week, and we're going to finish it out on Father's Day. Are you okay with that, church? So we got one more week to go. I'm going to give you 6, 7, and 8. As we've been talking, if you're a guest here with us, we've been talking about the 10 actions that every kid needs from adults. 10 actions that every kid needs from a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle or a coach, a mentor, whatever it might be. Chances are, if you're out and about, you have some kind of kids around you influence within the sphere of your influence, whether it's in a neighborhood or a workplace or wherever it might be. You have kids around you. The truth is, kids are not just 9. We've got kids that are 19. Some of us have kids that are 39 and 59 and so forth. Because once a kid, help me out here, parents, always a kid, right? And so this works no matter what. And it's really important for us as we go through this, thinking through this. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. I'm going to read it for you, and then we're going to read it aloud together here at Northmont Saturday. All of our venues, we're going to read it aloud because we want to make sure that we get this. Proverbs says this: start children off on the way they should go, and even when they're old, they will not turn from it. Proverbs, being the wisest man that ever walked the planet, he wrote these words. As I mentioned last week, if you weren't here, this was a time when Israel was beginning to develop relationships with outside nations. As they were beginning to think about what it would mean to trade and to live near and live with and begin to develop these kinds of relationships. And so he writes these proverbs, these words of wisdom, to know how to live out your faith, how to live out God in you in the context of all your relationships. And of course, in this one, he's talking about parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and coaches and teachers and mentors. Start them off in the right way. I mean, they have to make their own decisions, but we can start them off in the right way, and even when they're old, they won't turn from it. In other words, if you do these 10 things that we're talking about, and maybe some more, but at least these 10 things, they'll never forget this. And this will impact their lives, as it's our job to impact the next generation, whatever that means for you. So if you're 69, that means the next generation. If you're 18, that means the next generation. It's our job to do that. So let's read this aloud. Doesn't matter what your translation is. Here, Northmont, Saturday, here we go. All of us on the word go, let's read this aloud, all right? Let's get this inside of us. Here we go. Ready? Go. Start children off on the way they should go. And even when they are old, they will not turn from it. All right, starting out, let me just say this. No regrets, no excuses. All right, as we've been going through these 4 weeks, what we're trying to do here is not set you up for regret, because the reality is if you are a parent or a grandparent, chances are there are some things that you would say, you know, man, I'd love to do that one again. You know, I'd love to say that a little differently. I wish I would have handled that situation differently. We're not here in any way to try to bring out regret, because we all have regrets, okay? So that's on the one end. On the other hand, we have no excuse. The reason why we're doing this series is so that we have no excuses. We want to be great parents and great grandparents and great big brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles, right? We want that. And so no regrets, no excuses as we're going through this series and as we're talking about these 10 things. Now, get your pen out, because if you've not been with us, I'm going to give you the first five. You can jot them down. And today, we're going to talk about 6, 7, and 8. And then next week, we're going to finish up 9 and 10 on Father's Day. All right? 6, 7, and 8, we'll talk about today. But let me just make sure that we're all caught up to speed here. 10 actions that kids need from every single adult around them, particularly parents and grandparents. Number one, you have to value parenting. Come on, kids, help us out here. You need to know if you're a kid here, and you get to determine whether you're a kid or not, but if you're a kid, you need to know that we as your parents and grandparents want to value our jobs. We want you to know that we love you so much that we want to do a great job at it, and we make lots of mistakes, but we're trying really hard, and that's why we're in this series. We want to value parenting. It's the number one thing. In fact, as I've been saying to you, you can list all the other 9 in any order that you want, but you have to start with number one. You have to value parenting. You have to be intentional about it. You have to stop and think about it. You have to come up with a game plan. Remember that week one, if you weren't here? We've got to be very, very intentional about this, and so number one is value parenting. Here's number two, generous affection. We talked about the fact that it has to be proper and it has to be right, but affection is something that every kid needs. Even if they're a neighbor kid, they need it in their life. It's really, really important. I have hugged my 4 boys more in the last 4 weeks than probably in the last couple of months. I'm not sure they're excited about it, but it's been great, I'm telling you. I mean, every time I find them, I'm trying to hug them, and it's awesome. In fact, I was at the pool with them this week for just a couple of hours, and another family's kid, we don't even know, we're playing basketball with him, and he's on my team, and I'm hugging him, and he's looking at me like, who are you, you know, and I'm hugging him, and he goes, you know, generous affection is something that's really important for kids. It's something that they need in their lives. Number three, encouraging words. Encouraging words is really, really important. It's amazing how as parents, the words that we say and the things that we say to our kids and grandparents, and if you're an aunt or uncle, let me tell you, you have a powerful, powerful influence in the life of kids around you, if you're an aunt or an uncle. The words that you use. Let me just give you a little bit of a clue. I was an athlete for many, many years and still play athletics now, but not like I did before. And it's amazing how when I go to athletic events, there's a coach there and they're playing the sport, whatever the sport is, soccer, softball, baseball, whatever. Have you noticed that parents in the stands also become the coaches? How many of you have ever noticed that? Let me just see here, right? Parents, stop it, okay? Grandparents, we don't need you to do that. Here's what you need to do. You just need to encourage them, and when they get off the field, just say, man, you played so well today. 48 hours later would be a good time for you to say, you know what, you may want to swing a little differently, because what they need is they need encouraging words. Let the coach do the work. He can be the bad guy, you know. Encouraging words is really, really important. Here's number four, planned fun. We talked about this last week. It's really important to have fun, and it's got to be planned, because life just crowds it out, right? Help me out here, parents. It just crowds it out, and so we need to plan it, and we need to get it down, and we need to try to work on this. Number five, loving discipline. If you missed it, go back. Last week we talked about this. Loving discipline is really important. Emphasis on the loving. In fact, love is discipline. If you really love your kid, you'll discipline them. Or if your kid is an adult, if you love them, you will set boundaries for them. Same thing. That's really, really important. So let me get to number six. You ready? Here we go. Number six, learned responsibility. This is what every kid needs from adults around them. Learned responsibility. Kids need to learn responsibility. Here's what I want you to do. Here, Northmont Saturday, all of us in the room here, I want you to turn to the people next to you and I want you to answer this question. Why are kids not responsible? Like, what's the problem if a kid is not responsible, okay? In all of our locations and venues, just go ahead and just turn to the people next to you. Why are kids not responsible? Answer that question to the people around you real quick. Just answer the question. Just, if you're a great grandparent, you should know this answer. Northmont Saturday, I don't know what's happening over there, but I saw one couple going like this. I don't know. All right. Why are kids not responsible? Let me give you my answer and let's see how close we are, okay? Because they're not being taught. We have to teach responsibility. Let me mention three things about responsibility. Number one, responsibility is not genetic. You don't pass it on in your DNA, right? I mean, I know some of you are engineers and you have your to-do lists, and I love that. I mean, you've had your to-do list for weeks and what you're going to do in the next months. You know, I mean, you got it all together and you set it all out and you're very organized, and I love you folks like that. And some of us take our day one day at a time. That's great too. But, you know, the reality is if you're going to be a responsible adult, it's not going to happen naturally in your kids. They have to be taught. You don't pass it out genetically, right? How many of you remember when you grew up? I remember when I grew up, I would hear, you know, adults, older adults, and I'll let you determine what older means. I used to hear older adults say, man, you know, when I was a kid, we used to get up at 5 in the morning, and we walked to school barefoot in the snow, uphill both ways. And then we'd come home and we'd work till midnight and then do our homework. Man, you kids have it really easy. Anybody ever hear that before, right? How do you go uphill both ways, by the way, right? So I got thinking, what would the kids today say, right? Probably something like this. Man, when I was a kid, I used to get up at 8:30 and breakfast would be on the table, and you know, then I'd go to school and it was really hard to find a parking spot. I mean, it was terrible. I could hardly find a parking spot, you know. We got out at 4, and I was only allowed to play, you know, PlayStation till 9 p.m. Can you believe that? And then if my parents really got mad, I mowed the lawn, you know. I mean, can you imagine what kids might say? The reality is, here's what I'm saying. It doesn't happen naturally. Responsibility does not happen naturally. Well, you might be asking, what does irresponsibility look like? Like, how would you notice that in somebody? Whether they're 9 years old, 19 years old, or 39, what does irresponsibility look like? Can I suggest three things to you? There's probably many more, but let me just get the conversation started with us here before we look into Proverbs and look at a verse that will talk about the importance of responsibility. Three things that will help us to understand and look for irresponsibility in kids, whether they're 9, 19, 39, or whatever. Here's number one, apathy. When you notice a kid who's apathetic and they just don't want to do anything, they don't want to go anywhere, they just are very apathetic about life, they're apathetic about their relationships, tragically, if they're apathetic about their spiritual lives, when they're just plain apathetic, that's a pretty good indication that there's some problems with being responsible in their lives, and we've got some work to do. Apathy could be a really big indicator as far as irresponsibility in the life of a child or a kid or an adult kid or something. Here's number two, blame. When a child blames everybody, right? When they blame the coach and they blame the teacher, it's the teacher's fault, I got a D, right? It's the teacher's fault. It's the boss. It's the brother. I blame it on my brother, my sister. I blame it on my parents. I blame it on the dog, right? I mean, it's just blame. When you see a child blaming everybody around them, that's a pretty good indication that there's probably some irresponsibility that needs to be addressed in their lives. The blame game is a really good indicator for irresponsibility. Here's a third one, what I'm calling a, quote, care for me attitude, unquote. Care for me. You know, when a child is 9 and school is in session, although we've got some, you know, some people who do school all year long, when school is in session and your child is 9, you wake them up, right? You wake them up and you say, hey, it's time to get up, time to get breakfast, and, you know, and time to get off to school. What I've noticed, what we've noticed even in our own home as we're going through this and learning this ourselves as parents, it's amazing how when they get 17 and you don't wake them up and they get up late, they come to you and say, why didn't you wake me up? Ever hear this before? Why didn't you wake me up? Well, pretty good indication that there's some irresponsibility going on there because there's a care for me kind of an attitude. And of course, you could add probably lots of your own stories there, but just to give you a little bit of a, you know, kind of a way for you to notice irresponsibility, apathy, blame, and a care for me kind of an attitude. See, I think as parents, I think we need to take a really good look at ourselves and ask the question, are we teaching responsibility? Because that's our job as parents. And grandparents, and aunts and uncles, and coaches, and mentors. See, over the last 10 years, there's been a term that's used, and I want us to guard against it. So here's number 3, if you're jotting this down. We need to guard against what's called extended adolescence. This is a term that's been used in the last 10 years. Now, if you're a brand new parent and you've got a child that's around 5, 6, 7, when you think of adolescence, you're thinking of 10, 11, 12, 13, somewhere in that area, right? They're going into adolescence. In fact, oftentimes when we refer to adolescence, we often refer to middle school students, right? They're in that adolescence period. Do you realize that the studies tell us today that what's happening with our kids is that there's an extended adolescence that's taking place? Most of us think that adolescence stops somewhere around 17, 18, 19. What they're telling us now is that there's an extended adolescence, that it's not ending at 19. It actually is going into the mid-20s and even into the late 20s. Extended adolescence. Marriages, as a general rule, kids are getting married later and later and older and older. Now, that's not all too bad, right, parents? That's not all too bad. But the studies will show us that there's an extended adolescence taking place. I don't know if you've seen the news article of this guy, Ethan Couch. Anybody see the article of Ethan Couch, this kid in Texas, 16 years old, who was completely drunk. His blood alcohol level was massive. He had narcotics on board, and he killed a youth pastor. He killed a mom and a daughter and one other person, 4 people that he killed, his 16-year-old child, Ethan Couch. And as he went to court, he had a very high-power lawyer, and the lawyer was able to get him off on this defense. Ready for this? Here was the defense. Affluenza. Have you ever heard of that term? I never heard of it. I had to look it up. Affluenza, which is parents that coddle their children into poor judgment. You know what you used to call that? Spoiled, right? Here's the story. Watch this.
Well, Couch's lawyers arguing that the teen suffers from affluenza and that his parents are responsible for the tragedy. He says they raised him in a family so wealthy that he didn't realize his actions would have consequences. His attorney commending the judge.
We applaud Judge Boyd for having the courage to issue the sentence that's going to give Ethan Couch a chance to develop and to a productive citizen and try to make amends for his actions.
PhD Charles, Dr. Chuck Williams, a trained child and adolescent psychotherapist and an educational psychologist, joins us now. Dr. Chuck, it's great to have you with us. You're the right person to talk to about this. Is affluenza...
Jenna, thanks for having me.
Is affluenza a real thing?
You know, I was thinking about this. This is the least amount of research I've ever done for a segment. You know why? Because it's not a real thing. It's made up. I couldn't go anywhere to look for theories, statistics, data. It's some made-up explanation for the entitled and the rich, and it's bogus, and it sends the absolute wrong message both to parents and kids, especially as we deal with what I see is a sort of problem with empathy or the lack thereof, especially among our youth, encouraged by parents who allow them to use excuses such as this. This is heinous and unconscionable, and I can't believe we're even talking about the fact that this is something that's real.
Well, one wonders now with this type of case if it will be used again. I'm sure it will. I'm sure this is not going to be the first or the last time we talk about it, Dr. Chuck. You know, it's interesting that this teenager was actually cited for alcohol possession in the months before he killed these people. And his parents paid for his lawyer services, and he was supposed to do community service and something like, you know, in that sort of vein. And one wonders about that argument, about whether or not a child that grows up in any sort of home, even, you know, if they're wealthy, if that could explain their behavior and somehow get them off. What do you think about that?
I think, Jenna, we're talking about a major issue in our homes. This goes back to parents, whether you're talking about flash mobs, the knockout game, or affluenza. Parents are responsible for setting boundaries and limits, for talking about morals, values, developing character in their children. When they don't do these things, then we have kids behaving badly. In this sense, it's more than that. He killed four people. He should have to pay for that. What message are we sending to Ethan when he kills four people? There's nothing more serious in our society. And his parents say, we're going to get you off by saying you're too rich, you're too entitled, and you don't understand consequences, and you've not learned how to shape or modify your behavior or to behave appropriately. It sends the absolute wrong message. So here's the thing. If we can't hold the kids accountable, which seems to be an issue sometimes in this country, then let's hold the parents accountable. So the kids have affluenza. What do the parents have?
Now, certainly that's an exaggerated case, but let me state up, no regrets, no excuses, right? Parents, grandparents, what we want to do is we want to help our kids to learn responsibility in their lives. Let me give you four things. Parents, if you want to jot this down, how are we contributing to irresponsibility? That's a question I'm asking that we ought to be asking. Is there a way that we're contributing to irresponsibility? And I believe there is. There's at least a couple things. I'm going to give you four. There's probably many, many more. But let me give you four ways that we contribute to irresponsibility. Here's number one. When we make too much money available to them. Too much money available to them. That creates irresponsibility on the part of kids. Number two. Contributing to irresponsibility, when we tell our kids that they can do no wrong, right? I mean, we live in this culture, as I've mentioned before, where everybody gets a trophy. No kid can do any wrong. We need to be straight up and honest with them, lovingly, but we need to be honest with them to help them in order to teach responsibility. Number three, we need to stop rescuing kids from all their pain. Because you see, pain can be a great thing. Now, certainly, there's balance there. But we have to be careful of rescuing our kids from all their pain. And then number four, we need to, if we're going to, you know, be careful about contributing to irresponsibility, we need to, you know, not eliminate consequences. Don't eliminate consequences. They need to be there. Several weeks ago, before school ended for us, our kids are in school, and my wife, on the way out the door, she said to me one day, she said, hey, would you stop by the school on the way to the office? And I go, why? And she says, well, because one of the boys, you know, one of the sons left their lunch. They forgot their lunch. And I said, oh. And she said, would you drop it off? And in my head, I didn't say this, but in my head, I'm thinking, well, he forgot it, so he needs to miss lunch. And then she said it. She said, well, you know, you got to go bring his lunch because if you don't give him lunch, he's going to starve. And then she said this, he's going to starve to, help me out, starve to, right. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, well, let him starve. He forgot it. And of course, I'm looking at it, and all the moms are like, what's wrong with you, right? And all the dads are like, yeah, right, And the truth is, I mean, she's right. He needs to have lunch. But, here's the deal. I actually Googled it. It takes 70 to 90 days for someone to die of starvation. How many of you want to guess whether I went to the school and dropped off the lunch or not? Yeah, I brought the lunch, okay? So I'm studying this and I'm thinking to myself, I'm contributing to this irresponsibility, right? I mean, it's amazing. And so we need to research this and understand this. Here's what Proverbs 27 says. Proverbs 27 says, a prudent person foresees danger ahead and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 12. Some more wisdom for us. We need to make sure that we're preparing for the future, and the way we do that in our kids' life is that they learn responsibility. It doesn't happen naturally, and we need to guard against the extended adolescence in their lives. Here's number 7. Positive memories. Here's what kids need in their lives from every adult: positive memories. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9 says, "Only be careful and watch yourself closely so that you do not forget the things your eyes have seen, or let them fade from your hearts as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to their children after them." Do you know, if you were to take the Bible and you were to read it from cover to cover, there are all kinds of things that God gives to us in order that we might remember things. We're pretty forgetful people. It's amazing. Do you realize that every time you see a rainbow, God put it there because he wants to remind us. He made a promise. As we look through Scripture, we can see that even in the Old Testament, circumcision was a symbol of a covenant that God made. Do you realize why coming to worship and taking a day off of work and resting and coming together with your kids and bringing them here and worshiping and giving and offering things to God? It's because it reminds us that God is God and that he knows us and he has our future and he has our best interest in mind. Joshua stacked up stones. We have them stacked up here and at Northmont to remind us as a church of the people that went before us. And Joshua stacked up stones. Do you realize that in the Bible, the reason why we take our money, listen carefully, we take our money, we don't give our money to God. We bring our money to God. The reality is it's all his anyway, right? And so the reason we bring it back to him and we give it to him is because it reminds us that everything that we have comes from him. And in his grace, somehow he gives us what we have. Some of us have more than others. That's not the issue. The issue is that it reminds us. Communion. We have communion once a month here if you're new. And we take a piece of bread and we take a cup and it reminds us of what God has done by sending his son. Every time you see birds and flowers, do you realize that every time you see a bird and every time you look at a flower, it ought to remind you of Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus said, if I'm going to take care of that bird and I'm going to take care of that flower, I'm going to take care of you. It's a reminder. We see it all through Scripture. Now, when it comes to memories, I'm well aware that some of us have bad memories. I mean, we all have bad memories, right? I mean, if I was to interview every single person here at Northmont Saturday in all of our venues, I know that many of us, we have bad memories. So let me give you a couple things to think about when we think of positive memories. Here's number one. Good memories can overpower bad ones. That's why positive memories are so important. Good memories can overpower the ones that have been hard and difficult in our lives. I think back to when I was a kid. My parents let me have a pet monkey when we were living in Indonesia. And it's kind of weird, but yeah, I had a pet monkey. And I can't even remember the name of the monkey, but I used to play with it every day. It was chained to a tree, and I'd go out there, and it would want to pick my hair and my head, and that's what monkeys do, right? And so I had this pet monkey. I still can't, believe why my parents did that, but they allowed me to have a pet monkey. Overseas, I remember my dad, he used to work on the car, and I am an expert flashlight holder. Anybody else? I mean, my dad taught me how to hold the flashlight certain angle, certain way, and I still remember that. That's a great memory in my life of being with my dad underneath the hood of a car or inside, and he would say, no, Dave, hold the flashlight this way, and I'd hold the flashlight, and my arm would get numb holding it a certain direction, you know, and because that's a memory that I have. I remember when we lived in Indonesia, we couldn't get soda or pop or whatever you call it, and so we would make our own. We would make root beer. I remember my dad getting Coke bottles, and he would put this concoction in that we would buy in the U.S. and bring it with us to Indonesia, and we would make root beer, and we would put a cap on it, and he'd put it up in the attic, and if you've ever been to Indonesia, you know, it's like 100 degrees over there. In the attic, it's like 130, and it was quite interesting. Some days, it was a little bit more beer than root, it seemed like, as it, you know, was up there fermenting a while, and I remember those memories in our lives. See, good memories can overpower bad ones. Here's the second thing I would say. Memories are the narrative of our lives. They're really the narrative of your life, your memories. That's why positive memories are so important to kids. Can I suggest a few things? I know you probably know this, but let me just suggest it. Let's just agree together if you're a parent, a grandparent, if you're a coach, an aunt, or an uncle. There's a few things that I think are really important that help to create memories. Let me give you a couple things that you can think through. Number one, traditions are important. Traditions create memories. So create traditions in your family. If you're a newlywed and you're hoping to have kids, remember this. Create traditions and do it early because your kids will remember them. See, we have a tradition in our home that every Christmas, there's not only the gifts under the tree that we have, but there's even, in my mind, a better gift. My wife makes cinnamon rolls every Christmas morning. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's the first thing we get when we get up, a cup of coffee and cinnamon rolls. That's a tradition that we have in our home. Here's another tradition. No one is allowed to bring watches on vacation. That's a tradition in our family. So typically, I get in the car before we're going to take off for vacation, and I say, okay, everybody, give me their watches. You know, I remember one time, one of the sons, he put 3 watches on his arm. And I said, okay, everybody, give me the watches. And so we took all the watches off, and I bring them back inside the house because, I don't know, help me out. Vacation should be about you go to sleep when you're tired, you get up when you're not, and you eat when you're hungry. Anybody else with me on this, right? And so no watches. That's a tradition in our home. No watches on vacation. We're not allowed to have watches on vacation. We have steamboat, which is an Asian soup, every single New Year's Day. That's a tradition in our home because traditions are important. Memories are the narrative of our life. Here's number two. Capture memories. Find things that either a picture or something that you can remember. We have this game that because we love to go to the beach, where we collect shells, and we have a contest, and the contest is whoever can collect the best shell, and everybody gets to vote, they get to pick the restaurant that we go and eat that night. Interestingly enough, I was thinking about it this week, I don't know that I've ever won that contest. I get outvoted every single time, you know. And so we find these shells, and the boys will find the shells, and Kathy, and whoever finds the nicest, best shell, they get, you know, we vote, and then they get to pick the restaurant for the evening. This week I was asking the boys, and I said, hey, guys, what do you remember as some of the memories? And one of my sons said, Dad, I remember when we go camping. And we used to go camping a lot, and we would buy a pin of every single location that we would go camping. I have a pin from every place we camped. And I said, what do you remember most about camping? And one of my sons says, well, man, I remember going down to Florida. And you remember when you backed up the camper and you smashed the minivan? I go, you remember that? Like, that's a memory? I mean, that was his positive memory, you know, of our trip. So capture memories. Here's number three. Create prioritized family times. Create prioritized family times. We go to restaurants and people look at us like we're, you know, strange. And even now, our boys are, 2 of them are adults anyway. And so we'll go to a restaurant and when we have a meal together, I will often collect all the silverware. So I'll put all the silverware right next to me. And then I'll put my hands at the table and say, okay, how many fingers do I have? And the person who gets the closest, they get one piece of silverware. you know, while we're waiting for our meal to come. So we play this game. So, you know, put my hands on her. How many fingers? And they get to guess. Okay, then you get a piece. And whoever gets the most silverware in the game, they get to pick a dessert and everybody else watches. Pretty cool game, isn't it? Right? Try it. See how well that goes for you in your house. Number four, take adventures. That creates memories. Take adventures. A number of years ago, we took our whole family to Indonesia. I mean, we just saved and saved and saved, and we took our whole family to Indonesia because that's where I grew up, in Malaysia, where Kathy and I went to school together, and we wanted to go and just have a great family vacation together, and we have all kinds of memories. Let me give you just a little window into our vacation in Indonesia. Watch this.
Well, here we all are. We're all lined up. We stopped for a little break, and there's Steve and Diane, and there's Tyler and Dominique, and Brannon and Kathy in the background there, and Michael, and our good friend Doug up front, and Brent's in the back of that, and there's Matt. And, well, let me give you a little view. Here's Peyton and I as we're on our motorbike. We're just gotten started, and we're excited about getting going for the day. Well, we're riding along the road here, and I want you to know that I'm not driving. Actually, I'm on the back. There's Peyton driving. He's doing a really good job, actually. In Malaysia, it's legal to drive at the age of 13, so Peyton's in. Here we are driving through the kampung. A kampung is a village, and now Brent is driving, and Brent is right on the bubble, but he's doing a great job. Me riding on the back, and you'll notice that there are some trees and rice fields to the left, and you can see them there all the way around there. And you'll notice it's right next to water, so they can do some irrigation. And we're headed to a fishing village.
With no blessing, we're on the beach here, eating our fried corn.
And Brandon had glasses with the vine.
Just as I remember as a kid, delicious.
This is the delicacy here on the beach. It's corn on a barbecue. And we're right here.
Informasikan kepada seluruh rombongan dari guru-guru SMP Negeri 13 Malang agar segera berkumpul di hotel Patrick untuk melanjutkan perjalanan menuju ke sentral parkir. Sekali lagi kami informasikan.
How many of you think it's unsafe to drive a motorcycle at 13 years of age? Let me just see here. Probably not a good idea, right? We created lots of memories. I'm telling you, they remember that. Here's a third thing I would say about positive memories. Our legacy is often defined by the memories. Do you know, I've never sat next to a person whose loved one is on the threshold of death where they've said, "Could you bring me a brochure of the car that I have? Would you bring up my Excel spreadsheet so I can kind of see how much my IRA is?" I've never had that. Every time I've sat with somebody who's losing a loved one, they say, "Can you bring the kids around? Can you get the grandkids? Can we begin to tell stories?" And story after story after story is being told. That's why memorial services and funerals are so important, because what you do is you come and you leave a legacy by all the memories that are there. See, positive memories are so very important. Here's number eight, our presence. Our presence, your presence is important. John chapter 1, verse 14 says, "So the Word became human," that's Jesus, "and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. We have seen his glory, the glory of the Father, the Father's one and only Son. God sent his one and only Son to be with us." God's presence was so important that he decided to send his Son. And in fact, in Ephesians, it tells us that when Jesus went back into heaven, then he then sent us his Spirit, which lives inside of us, because it is God with us, Emmanuel. God's presence is with us. God models for us a couple things about presence. Number one, physical presence isn't enough. It takes emotional presence. Emotional presence. I got to be honest with you. This is something I got to work on in my life, because the reality is it is possible. Maybe it's just a guy thing. I don't know. To be in the room and yet not to be in the room. Are you with me? Ladies, you know what I'm talking about, right? And I'm so glad that my wife helps me with this, because there are times when there's so much going on in my mind. Physical presence isn't enough. Here's the second thing I would say. Material things and money never equal to T-I-M-E. Never. They'll never equal. I was always reminded of that every time my wife used to say, well, we need to go to our son's sixth grade band concert. Anybody been to a sixth grade band concert? They're horrible, right? They can't even play the instrument. And you go for about 20 minutes and they're squawking and this and that, and yet you go. Why? It's so important, because it's T-I-M-E. It's our presence is so important. And then here's the last one. Guard against technology. I think technology is one of our greatest assets, and in relationships, I think it's one of our greatest defects. It's amazing that we can be around someone that we love and we're not available to them, and yet we're available to everybody on the World Wide Web through social media. It's amazing. I'm out of time, but let me give them to you quickly. Let me give you three tips in dealing with technology. Parents, I'm learning this too. Three tips. Ready? Number one, no talking on the phone when kids are in the car. No talking on the phone when the kids are in the car. Sadly, I learned this from my youngest son. He said, Dad, when I'm in the car, would you mind not being on the phone? I said, yes, I will do that. Number two, no phones at the table. No phones at the table. In fact, I collected them. Let me show you a picture. We had a dinner with my kids and their cousins. 10 phones, if you want to count them. You should have seen it. It was this buzzing mass on the table. Let me just... No phones at the table. Number three, don't make any decisions by text messages. Nothing wrong with text. Just don't make any decisions. Who, what, when, where? Fine. Why? No. No decisions by text. Because that way then we get to talk and we have conversations. Our presence is really, really important. Come back next week. We'll do 8, 9, and 10, and we'll finish out this series as we're thinking about fathers on Father's Day. Thanks so much for being here. Let me just close in prayer. God, we thank you that we get the opportunity to be here. We thank you for all these moms and dads and grandpas and grandmas and all these aunts and uncles and big brothers and sisters. We pray, God, that you would help us. Thank you for teaching us through your word and these simple and yet profound truths. In Jesus' name we pray, and the church said, amen.